of Women Podcast.
We're here at Olby's today for the next series of the Power of Women podcast. My name is Ruby Rare. I am an author and sex educator and podcaster and very enthusiastic Margate resident. And this series is called Leading Ladies. I'm going to be chatting to some brilliant women doing fantastic things all across Thanet. I'm here today with Mia Polak from Margate Pride, who does amazing work in the community in Margate and beyond. So to begin with, hello Mia, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I feel very excited to be chatting to you finally, because we know each other, but sort of peripherally.
Yeah.
And now we get to actually have a chat, which is nice.
Do I get to ask you lots of questions? I'll do it after.
If you want to, you can surprise me. But this is really about you and the wonderful work that you are, and the glorious person that you are. So I'd like to start right at the beginning with this. So before Pride and all of the wonderful things that you do. Where did you grow up and what were you like as a child?
Gosh. I grew up in a village called Bushy, which is near Watford, so just outside of London.
Trying not to laugh at it being called
I know,
Bushy.
Right? I didn't really realise that it's quite a funny name until I was in a pub age 16 and told someone, and I thought, oh yeah, that's actually ridiculous. Anyway, that's where I grew up. What was I like as a child? I think I was quite friendly. Yeah, friendly, kind of happy. You know, I had a lovely childhood. My parents were great.
What was your favourite colour when you were growing up? Colour? And why?
I've always been drawn to green, which is interesting because I generally just wear black in my adult life. But I'm fond of green.
Green's a banging colour.
I don't know why.
Well, I think like nature-y stuff.
Nature-y.
I think it is kind. I mean, I feel like I'm cheating on pink a bit by saying this, but I think that green is actually the ultimate colour. Pink's my favourite, but green, I think, is the actual official best colour.
Later.
You heard it here first at Powell.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah, green and orange I was quite into. Mm. Although I never wore them. They made my eyeballs happy.
And happy eyeballs is really important. Yeah. It's not about always like what we're wearing. It's kind of how we're surrounding ourselves. So as you were growing up, I know a little bit about you and kind of I'm curious about how art and queerness and any of your other like passions kind of came into your life, as it were.
I think I've always been into art or been arty. My mum and my dad, but more my mum, had a tendency to drag me and my brother around lots of galleries growing up. And she'd make it interesting by asking us to write down all the paintings with a bottom in, and we'd get a penny a bottom. So that was quite a good way to kind of focus on works.
I'm going to play that game. I want to go to the National Gallery immediately and play that game.
Yeah, if there's lots of flying babies, you know, quids in. It's quite good. Yeah, we did Penny and Moustache at the Wallace Collection, which again was quite good.
Excellent.
I've always, been arty, done art. I think into my queerness, I think I was pretty late to kind of realise that I am queer. Gay, lesbian, kind of evolved being able to use certain language as I've got older and more confident and understood everything better. But yeah, school, I mean, I think I was always friendly with everyone. I kind of got on with everyone, that sort of person, but always felt a little bit outside. You know, I would pretend to fancy the boys, but yeah, obviously didn't actually. Although maybe I did actually, you know. There's a spectrum. But yeah, I kind of came out a lot later, I think I had an inkling at secondary school, but it wasn't until late on at university that I actually came out to friends and then to my parents even later.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's a real, well, obviously everyone's experience of kind of understanding their queerness is so unique, but I really resonate with what you're saying there, because it took me until I was like 23 or 24 to come out to myself and to other people. And I had no inkling that I was queer as a teenager whatsoever. I pushed that down so much, despite the fact I was making out with loads of women. I was just like, this isn't a queer thing, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that experience and that perspective growing up as a teenager, you know, everyone in adolescence, I think, feels some version of outside of the norm, whatever that looks like. But when queerness comes into it, that's even more complicated. And a lot of us, I think, have that experience of being a teenager, of sort of looking in from the outside and not quite fitting, not quite understanding where our place is in the world. So where do you think you first kind of found that feeling of like home and acceptance?
I mean, I just wanted to mention on the kind of growing up as a, not realising I was a queer kid, I kind of realised a lot later in life how damaging Section 28 was. So there's all the, you know, the legislation that prohibited the, inverted commas, promotion of being gay. So I kind of, I think, yeah, growing up I didn't know any gay people. And in, you know, in terms of the media or the public eye, you know, there were some super camp men who I was always drawn to. I think the only gay woman or lesbian I knew of was Martina Navratilova. So got a lot of respect for her, actually, in older life to have been an out sports person and also a very successful one. So I think, recently we've, you know, with my pride hat on, a few of us went to visit Hartsdown School, Academy rather, who've got an LGBTQ+ youth group, which was amazing. And it was so wonderful to meet these kids who know or identify with being queer and could talk about it. So props to Mr. Humphreys for setting that up.
Yes.
I kind of realised a lot. I hadn't realised how damaging that legislation was, which was only got rid of in 2003. I think I would have come out a lot sooner and kind of understood myself a lot sooner if it was just talked about.
Thank you for bringing that up. I think that's such an, like, that's, it's like, it's, you can't not talk about it in this context, because I think, and even post 2003, the ripple effects that it has and the impact, you know, many school leaders now will have been trained under Section 28, and kind of the impact, the lasting impact that has is really important to mention. And it does fill me with so much hope now that young people, when I used to teach lots of sex ed in queer youth groups, and I loved those spaces because I would always go, and I would be teaching them some stuff, but they would be teaching me more, because I was oh wow, you know so much more about queer identity and culture than I do. Okay, why am I facilitating this session and not you? And there's a real joy there, but there's also a bit of a sense of loss that, you know, someone who's 13, 14 can be able to embrace that community and that knowledge and love in a way that we weren't able to.
Definitely, definitely. And it really hadn't dawned on me until about 10 years ago when I went on it was actually one of our now fellow Pride organisers, Nell. She was leading a queer tours of London. Yeah, and was talking about Section 28 and that legislation and how damaging it was. And yeah, I just had this moment of realisation as to what my life as a young queer person could have been if that wasn't the case. So it's important to keep fighting for legal improvements.
Always.
For queer people.
And the work doesn't stop.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, what was your other question?
Well, I think I'm kind of going to...
I went back.
No, that's totally fine. I would like to... I'm going to ask you a different thing, and I feel like we're going to meander into that question in a minute. Because I want to get to Margate, because that feels really important. So when did you move to Margate? Kind of how did you find your way here? And let's hear the Margate Pride origin story. How did that happen? And kind of you have created this incredible community, and I'm really curious to know about how it started.
I moved to Margate coming up to 6 years ago now, but I still had a foot in London for a few of those earlier years. And I think I got involved with Margate Pride fairly early on, in a very small way. I was just getting to know people and the community. Margate Pride started 7 years ago by Dan Chilcott, Amy Redmond, and Tommy, or Tristan. And yeah, I think there were a few others involved as well. And I think it started off as a, you know, 50-person march from Turner to the Clock Tower. And it's, grown exponentially ever since. The last time we were able to have a parade, which was 2019, around 9,000 people showed up, which was pretty incredible. And the town's really embraced it, and it's such a wonderful thing to see. You know, different businesses, independent businesses, organisations, schools, youth groups, you know, all turning up. But doing things all year round, like Margate Pride is not just in August. Like, we, you know, the parade or the parade and rally are always the second Saturday of August. Just FYI, everyone.
Put it in your calendars.
Yep, 13th of August this year. But there's always been additional talks and workshop programming, you know, mainly in the summer, but actually increasingly we're doing more stuff year round. And I think that's important. It's, you know, we're not just a big party in the summer, you know. It's fun, like, let's be real. It's a really fun day.
It's a great party in the summer, but Margate Pride, from the moment that I moved here and kind of started to learn a bit more about Pride, immediately it was really obvious that it was not just a party and that that's not the focal point. And that's kind of rare, I think, with lots of, especially more like mainstream Pride events.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, certainly. I think, you know, we are a celebration, but I think there's always an element of protest and, you know, the fight to continue human equality is kind of embedded into everything we do. You know, it might feel kind of light touch, but I think visibility is really important. That's why I'm being brave and doing this podcast, put myself out there. But, you know, for example, one of the things we're hoping to announce more of soon is some tea time socials that we do year round. And that's, you know, queer performers performing for older members of the Margate community and also East Kent MenCap. And, you know, we'd love to roll it out to other different community groups. Because I think just visibility in itself is a bit of an act of protest. I think, you know, if at one tea time social an older person can understand queer people better just by the fact of having a lovely time, you know, if that can help them be more accepting of a queer grandkid, our job's done. That's, you know, it's not ramming things down people's throats at all. But I think those things are quite, important.
And I think showing that, like, the love within queer communities and this Margate queer community as well, because there can be a lot of fear and trepidation when someone is looking at an identity or a community that they don't understand because it's different to them.
Yeah.
And actually being able to break that down a little bit and just share how fun and joyful and accepting this can be, that before you get into any of the, like, education or politics or, like, real heavy lifting is such an important thing to do, because newness can feel really scary to people, or difference can feel really scary to people. And I love what Margate Pride does in so many different areas of just trying to break that down and kind of, it's almost like reinforcing the, like, foundations of the queer community and at the same time opening the doors and, like, wanting lots of people to be kind of flowing through the doors and, like, welcoming it. I don't know, I just built, like, a sort of Margate Pride fortress in, like, castle in my mind, which maybe you need to do next year.
Okay, that can happen.
Get building.
Chatting about the themes, let's do it.
Yeah, so could you, we've spoken a little bit already about, like, what Margate Pride's like and where it comes from, but in terms of the day, that second Saturday in August, could you describe the atmosphere there in three words?
Joyful's definitely one of them. That's the first thing that springs to mind, because it's a beautiful thing to behold, and that atmosphere is extraordinary. Yeah, I've got, like, joyful, celebratory, protest, I think. That's still very important to all the Pride organisers, for sure. And there's lots of placards that suggest as much, actually.
A joyful celebratory protest. That's, like,
actually
incredible.
Not happy with that. I'll probably think of a million other words later, but yeah, that'll do.
I think that more than just does that. I think that really captures what it feels like. For me, at least, last year was the first time I came to Margate Pride, and I've, like, known about it for years. And in that weird way, I was like, I can't, it's too special for me to go to. I can't, like, I don't know why. I'd never made it down for it before, but it was I think, like, that was probably my favourite day of last year. Like, it was just watching this space that I've moved to fairly recently and have just felt incredibly welcomed into it and, like, loved and accepted in, just seeing this town completely come alive, and that's led by queer people, but actually that so many people in the town, like, regardless of sexuality and gender, just, like, embrace this day to celebrate queerness. And yeah, it was really emotional, actually. And I think I've reflected on it a lot since, and I'm very excited for all of the future prides that I will be attending. Excellent. Can't wait for a parade now, because there wasn't a parade last year.
No, we've been... Oh, yeah, we can't wait to do it. I think the parades have always been really special. I mean, 2019, kind of coming over the hill as you approach Turner and just looking down along the front, that's quite emotional, actually. That's a special time. And it's just so great. I've got my friends and my community, and I know creative people in Margate. That's kind of my world, my closest world. But just seeing every walk of life show up for the parade, waving flags, kids being themselves, it's really beautiful. And I think we really, we kind of describe ourselves as a DIY grassroots pride, which is very true. It's a kind of team of volunteers that do, make it happen. And I think it's just, there's a real motivation for different organisations and businesses to just do something for the day,
mm-hmm.
at least that day, if not, throughout the month. And that's just, it's great to have had that impact and just to see it.
And it was so... I think it took me a good couple of hours to let it sink in. But from the beginning of that day last year at Pride, I was like, something's really different about today and I can't figure out what it is. And it just went on and on. It was kind of in the back of my mind. And then I realised I'd spent half a day already at Pride and I had not seen a single corporate sponsorship. I'd not seen a big brand with a rainbow logo or anything like that. And I'd kind of forgotten that is what most prides are just completely saturated by. And actually to put that to one side and for it to be about community and art and resistance was subtle enough that it took me a while to realise. But once I did, I couldn't not see it. And I kept going up to people and almost shaking them, being like, there's no corporate bus stuff here. This is amazing.
Yeah, it's very important to us. I mean, it's increasingly challenging. Mm-hmm. We've got bigger ambitions. We do need, money to support those ambitions. We're quite hot on paying artists. It's never loads. I mean, sometimes it's okay. But, that's, we don't want to take advantage of people. And we also want to support the community as well. So we're quite strict on who we will kind of take donations from. I remember going, I've only been to London Pride twice, I think, and they're kind of not my people. I mean, obviously they are my people. I shouldn't say that came out wrong. But it just doesn't feel right. There's so many parts of being queer that relate to, human equality and justice that kind of rubbing up against a corporate that doesn't support those values doesn't make sense to us.
Yeah.
So it will become increasingly challenging, but, there are, thankfully, we are an arts and culture-led pride, so there are grants and foundations that we can apply to, which serves us well. And, the community supports us as well, businesses, individuals, people kind of sell things and give a percentage to Pride, so that stuff's invaluable, and we're really grateful.
Yeah. And I think it's been really lovely. My perspective of this has very much been led by Margate Pride, but seeing people over the last few years really craving that return to Pride events being more grassroots and kind of community-led. And I think seeing Trans Pride in London captures a lot of that same energy, because actually it's getting back to the thing that's really important.
Yeah.
So it's out there and it's amazing and we love it, but obviously we need to keep fighting for it to make sure it's here, and it does make it more challenging. But I'm super grateful to you and the whole Margate Pride team that you're doing it. It's so amazing.
Thank you.
I want to ask a little bit about the impact that you think Pride's had on Thanet, because it's, 7 years and 6 years since you've been involved in it. it's really lovely to hear that it's been met, like welcomed in terms of the kind of Margate and the wider area. But over the years, have you kind of noticed any shifts in terms of how we're all thinking and feeling about queerness?
Yes, in terms of, you know, I think the businesses and the community at large kind of know, you know, it's a firm fixture in the diary now, and everyone tends to want to get involved, which is a beautiful thing to behold. But also just the community itself, the queer community has grown a lot since I've been here, which is incredible. It makes me very happy to think, you know, we have heard from people that they have made the decision to move to Margate because they know that there is a queer community and they'll be accepted here.
I'm one of those people.
Excellent. and that makes me happier than anything, really.
Yeah, I think the fact that Margate is being recognised more and more as a kind of beacon for creativity and queer acceptance is lovely. And it's not just saying it and then you get here and that's not the case. You get here and you feel it, and that's really magical.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we just want to, you know, it's that thing of trying to do things, activities and programming all year round, and just involve as many people, give people opportunities and, you know, more of a platform. That's, you know, there's more people here, so there's more energy, so we can do more.
Yay. Yeah. More.
More of it.
More. That's my excessive personality coming in. More of it. Well, it's quite...
I always want to do more, but there's only so many hours in the day I'm finding. Yeah.
So looking to the future, looking to like what that more looks like, I'm curious to kind of find out what your hopes for Margate Pride are in the future and, you know, the next few years, but also let's dream big. Like what, in like 20 years, what do you feel like Margate Pride's going to look like? Do you think we'll still need a Pride?
I'm a realist, so yes. I think, you know, I think we will, you know, the events will get bigger. I think we'd love to feel more secure in terms of finances and just knowing that we can deliver year on year. I think consistency is really important. Mm-hmm. You know, people have attended events and they always want to know when the next one is. You're like, you know, it would be lovely to be able to say, yeah, we've got year-round programming, here's what we can offer, here's what we can deliver. You know, we're exploring the possibility of having a dedicated space so we can, you know, have somewhere to run workshops and just, you know, for it to be a safe space for queer people of, you know, all generations. I mean, we're lucky in that, you know, we've got great relationships with lots of different organisations and venues in Margate, so we do feel safe in a lot of spaces, which is wonderful, and we'll continue to, you know, partner and collaborate with people. But it would be nice to have our own space. In terms of the Pride summer events, I mean, yeah, we're quite ambitious, but we're also realistic. We're kind of staggering those ambitions. It would be great to have a day of, you know, a really big festival, with like additional performers, and also to support queer artists. I think the, you know, the art trail was really embedded a couple of years ago because mm-hmm. we couldn't do a parade, so it's like, how can we have a presence across the town safely? And that's a real firm fixture, so it's kind of, you know, there's residencies, exhibitions, workshops, the lot. Yeah, I mean, I would hope that there's enough of us enough volunteers to be able to support other, you know, other initiatives a lot more. I think I'm really inspired by people like LGSM, who at Lesbians and Gays Support the Migrants, which was, you know, they've got their name from Lesbians and Gays Support the Miners, who were, yeah, real trailblazers in the 80s supporting the miners' strikes. That organisation is supporting migrants and the refugee crisis, and I feel like Pride could do a lot more to support other kind of issues, mm-hmm. but yeah, with a focus on queerness, obviously.
I think it's really important to not just think of, it's really easy, especially I feel like queer is a word that I use, like, I'm curious to see how many times in a day I use the word queer, because it's probably an embarrassing amount, but that isn't just one thing that exists on its own. Like, obviously, all aspects of, like, identity and politics come into queerness and can be viewed through that lens, and it's really important to bear that in mind for the future, so thank you for sharing that. Yeah,
very much. I think I wouldn't, you know, growing up, I wouldn't, you know, the word queer was... I mean, I'm old, but I'm not that old. But the word queer for me growing up was a derogatory. So to be able to use it now, it does feel quite political as well as just, you know, identity and sexuality.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
And please, will you tell me that you're going to keep doing the Winter Prides and the Panto?
Hell yeah.
Yay!
Yeah, it was phenomenal.
That was so much fun. I was sat in the front row and I literally had my jaw like to the floor, metaphorically did that. Because I was just so amazed at how incredible it was. And it was at Albies, which is where we're recording this today. So that feels very special.
Yeah, it was really fantastic. Just shout out to all of the crew that made that happen. Lolo, Ray and Lenny, who are in the kind of...
absolute icons.
Yeah, in the immediate Pride gang. But there's, you know, some incredible kind of drag performers that have come out of, you know, Pride activity. The panto was, I mean, it really was hilarious and very clever. And that will be a firm fixture for sure.
Good. Okay. Well, I look forward to there being Pride all year round. I've got one more question for you, Mia, which is a bit more of a reflective one, kind of looking into the future and about how you would like to be remembered for this work that you're doing in Margate and in Thanet. So how would you like to be remembered in terms of how you made a difference? And that could be big or small.
I feel very uncomfortable answering that question. Just that I helped make some nice things happen. I think that will be enough. I think just to have been involved in making joyful moments and making people feel safer, having opportunities to express themselves, because that's, you know, what the arts are all about. That'll do. Yeah.
Well, I think you're definitely doing that, and I think that's absolutely something that, like, Margate Pride holds at its heart, and I'm so grateful for you and the whole team for putting this together and making this incredible community. I can't wait to see what happens next.
Thank you very much.
Yay. Thank you so much for joining me, Mia. It's been a joy chatting.
Likewise. Thanks.
Thank you to Albies for having us and to Arts Council Recovery Fund for making this possible. Thanks to Darren on tech and Lisa, who's doing the BSL for this and all of the other podcasts. And we look forward to seeing Leading Ladies grow each year as a platform for us to celebrate the incredible women of Thanet. For more information on POW, the festival and the charity, check out powthanet.com and powthanet on socials. Thanks very much. Women podcast.